Stay tuned for a special edition of the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast.
Were you concerned? There's been a lot of, you know, a lot of different things going on in that market.
You know, there are. You're absolutely right. And it can be spotty. You can easily, you know, get into the wrong pocket.
Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Everybody, welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl.
And on this edition, we have Eric Stewart. He recently purchased with partners the Georgetown Apartments, 96 units in Granite City, Illinois. Bought it for $3.25 million, did a raise of $950,000. One of the key takeaways during this particular podcast is the fact that a unique thing happened in his raise. Somebody came in with a 1031 exchange. And if you've been in his business for any length of time and have been raising money, you have had people in the middle of your raise say, I got $500,000. I've got $1 million. It's a 1031 exchange. Can I put it in your deal? Most people say no, because they assume that you have to, you know, with a 1031 exchange, you have to go from the existing entity into a new entity, which would require a name change on the deal. And there's a lot of different things to it. But in reality, you can actually do a hybrid deal with an investor with a 1031 exchange. Eric explains how he did it in his particular deal. Also, what you'll discover here is Eric did something very stupid in this deal. And even though I don't tell him it was stupid, you're going to realize what it was as soon as he says it. I hope you realize what it was as soon as he says it. But we really pointed out. But he survived that doing what he did. And the deal worked out in the end anyways. After we talk about that deal and how they took it over and the process of raising the funds and how the underwriting went, we also go into lightning round. And some of the answers that he gives to the questions and lightning round may disturb you. That's all I'm going to say. May disturb you. All right. If you go to davetoday.com, I have got a free book offer for you. And it is my iconic Multifamily Millions book. I wrote this as a sequel to Emerging Real Estate Markets. But this has been the start of many, many of our students' Multifamily Millions. So many people were inspired by this particular book and continue to be inspired by, because it's foundational information that gives you the awareness, the foresight to know that you can become a multimillionaire, and the step-by-step on how to go do it. Now, this book retails on Amazon for $23. You can have it for free. All I ask is you pay shipping and handling of $7.95. And you can also get some free bonuses when you do, and also autograph it for you. Those bonuses are, number one, the 27 ways to buy multifamily properties with no money down. There's actually 104 ways in here. You hand it to your management company. They go out and do what it says. And then in doing that, you keep your property leased up and you keep that cash flow coming in. Another bonus I have is the Deal Flow Playbook. This is a playbook of checklists for all the different things that you're going to be doing in your multifamily deals, step by step. I learned a long time ago that if you do not follow a checklist and check things off, you miss things. And those are the things that are going to cost you money. So everything that you do in sourcing deals, underwriting deals, raising funds for your deals, taking over the properties on your deals, to the nitty-gritty, the lease audit on your deals, to preparing for the exit of your deals. Everything has a checklist. You get all those checklists as a bonus, and that's free. And then I mentioned I wrote the book Emerging Real Estate Markets. I also have a poster for you, and that is the Emerging Real Estate Markets poster. It gives you the four stages of the emerging markets. It gives you each particular phase, the key characteristics of those phases, and down below, it tells you what your key strategies should be for that particular phase. So you can just simply put this on your wall. And with that, you can determine what your market is, where it is in any particular phase. Or if you're looking for emerging markets, which markets around the United States are actually emerging. And then from there, you can make the most amount of money in the least amount of time with the least amount of risk. And as you know, investing in multifamily properties and becoming wealthy, that wealth is created through appreciation. So that's why we are giving you the market cycles as well. So Multifamily Millions, all the bonuses, just pay shipping and handling, and you get it now. All right, so before we bring Eric on, what I want to do is I want to talk about a little bit of mindset stuff today. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of, big into the mindset. I'm constantly trying to improve my mind, constantly trying to be positive. And one of the things, I rewatched The Secret. If you haven't seen that movie, first brought out, I think, in 2009. And then I'm a big believer in Joe Dispenza, Dr. Joe Dispenza, in his book Superhuman, and all of those things, and even the book Think and Grow Rich, of course, and the book The Magic of or The Science of Getting Rich. All of those things have one thing in common, and even Tony Robbins. I go to Tony Robbins events; he's awesome. You know, I used to follow him on stage at the Learning Annex. That was always a unique situation. He would have 10 or 20,000 people out there for 3 hours, fist pumping and yelling and screaming and all sweaty. And then I would go up there and there wouldn't be a break because I wanted to keep as many people in the room. But most people had to pee, so they were all headed for the exits anyways. The other half didn't even know who I was. They didn't care. Apartments, who wants to deal with tenants, trash, and toilets? So it was very unique. But Tony's stuff is all about what I'm about to say as well. And that is where your thoughts go, your energy flows. Okay. So life is all about what you think about. You can have a victim mentality or you can have a victor mentality. It's up to you. Okay. There's 1,000 reasons why you can't do something. There's 1,000 reasons why you can do something. But I'll tell you what, if you focus on the things that you can do, if you focus on the positive, if you focus on turning negative energy around so it fits a positive mold, and I'm not talking about being Pollyanna. All right. I'm just talking about being conscious of what you're thinking about, because when you start consciously thinking and redirecting your thoughts to positive things and positive outcomes and who you are going to be, okay, where your thoughts go, your energy flows and it creates those things. Your mind actually creates the things that you think about. So if you're thinking about negative things, your mind is going to create those negative situations. If you're thinking about positive things, your mind is going to think about positive situations. It's as simple as that. And you can rent The Secret for $2.99 on Amazon and give it a rewatch and do that. And if you're having some trouble with your thinking, do that. And trust me, you will be on the path of getting to where you want to be, getting to the place that you deserve to be. That's what it's all about. We all deserve great things. We all have power within us, greatness within us, as Muhammad Ali used to say. All right. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on Eric Stewart. So Eric, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. My company's Atlantic Business Capital, and we're in central Illinois, looking at properties across the country. That's the initial structure on me.
Actually, Eric and I go way back. Eric is a lending broker who we've used on occasions, a number of occasions, I should say, who's very good at what he does. You know, as you know, if you're new in this business, a lending broker basically goes out and looks at the capital markets, takes a look at your deal, finds out who would be the best suitor for your deal, brings you back anywhere from 3 to 7 term sheets, gives you, term sheets are like 20 or 30 pages after he's read them, he gives you an idea of, you know, which ones would be most favorable, then allows you to read through them and make your own decision. And then he goes back in and he starts negotiating, because all term sheets are negotiable. So Eric has actually spoken at our events, used to have my own stage at the Multifamily Millions event to teach people how to put a loan package together, because you want to look like as an experienced investor as possible, no matter what level you're at. And you also want to give them as much information so they can make a quick decision on your behalf, in your favor, is what we hope for. And I always say, you want to handle the objection before it's asked, you know, on the deal. So that's always a good time at the Multifamily Millions Bootcamp and doing that. How long ago has it been, Eric, since we first met each other? Was it 2006 or something like that?
It actually was. It was 07. Yeah.
2007. We were in Orlando. And he came to the event. Somebody introduced us. And right after the event, I had to be at the airport to catch my flight. I hadn't been home in a while. And Eric said he would give me a ride. But he didn't tell me he was only going to do the speed limit.
Yeah.
I was really and I was tight for my flight. That was like crazy. I'm like, come on, man. Can you go faster? Can you go faster? I can't miss this flight. I haven't been home in like 10 days.
Oh yeah. That and was, then I thought I had it dialed in. I thought it was like a shortcut that was going to be all shortcuts. No, it wasn't.
Yeah. It's like, don't worry about it, Dave. I know the back roads here. It isn't going to be a problem. We're going to get there in time. And I'm like, oh, man, just put the pedal to the metal. Then you tried a second shortcut, and that was all jammed up. And I was like, oh, my God. But I did make it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll never forget that.
You could have taken a Pony Express. You would have got there quicker.
Yeah. So, anyways, that started a very long relationship that goes on to this day. And then Eric actually, you know, he saw so many students. You know, he was financing a lot of different students' deals, and he saw people doing deals, and then he see them on their exit and exiting deals, and they were making so much money, and he was like, damn it, I got to get involved in this. And he did. So that's why he's on today. He's going to talk about a 96-unit deal that they put together called Georgetown Apartments in St. Louis, Missouri. So first of all, how did you come across that deal?
Another student actually brought it to me, and a lot of times – I would see loan requests, and if there was an opportunity to add value and help get the deal done, I would certainly do it. So this is a scenario where one of the students, his name's Addie Kumaldi, and he sourced the deal from a broker there in St. Louis that he developed a relationship with, and we were talking about it and then went through the different loan options, and you know, it was a great fit. I'm about 2.5 hours away from St. Louis, so I jumped on board.
Sweet. Okay, good. You put the deal under contract, okay, and then the next step was doing due diligence. What came up during the due diligence process? Anything funky?
You know, there wasn't anything funky. There were some areas that I would have done different on this one. The property presented well. It's an early 70s build, 1970 build, or you know, phased in through that time. We ended up, there were some things that I didn't pick up on that I should have. One was a section of buildings that didn't have the electrical updated. They were still on fuses, the old screw-in fuses. And I missed
screw-in fuses. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really old.
It was. So we had to do those. You know, but
did you miss that during your own personal inspection, or did the property inspector miss that too?
I didn't hire a contractor to do my inspection. The lender inspection found it, so we had to remedy that post-closing. But that was something that I should have picked up on, and I didn't. And I didn't hire an inspector of my own to go in and look at it. We walked each of the units.
So what was your rationale for not hiring a property inspector?
That was one where I was close, I had the time, and I just figured, you know, I can knock this out myself. And that was the lesson that I learned.
Yeah. Wow. Even the structural stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the structural stuff, when I looked at it, and you're looking at the walls and you're seeing, you know, when you look at the windowsills and things like that, I didn't see anything abnormal, anything out of the ordinary. And frankly, I had, maybe I'm a little spoiled because I had done so many lender inspections where I've walked with these guys that walk in and they basically look for something unusual to trigger a deeper dive. Right. So if they don't see anything unusual on the surface, they're not going to go back and peel that onion back or peel a layer back. Well, that's what I went in doing was not seeing. I didn't see anything unusual. So I didn't peel another layer back. You know, you start looking at these electrical boxes and you're looking at one, you're looking at 20, you're looking at 30. I didn't check. And that's where I got bit.
Were you using a checklist?
No. Well, I mean, one of my own, but not your checklist.
Oh, no. Well, at least you're using a checklist, though. Well,
yeah. But it wasn't professional like yours. So, you know, it's a perfect example of education not being cheap.
Yeah. You're going to pay for education one of two ways, right?
That's exactly right.
You're either going to get educated or the world's going to educate you. I certainly don't recommend doing your own property inspection. Actually, you're the first person I've heard of doing that. For the larger properties, but that's okay. It all turned out okay, but you just got to be so careful. I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, it's those hazardous waste problems that you may not be, you or anybody else that goes to inspect the property may not be aware of. You know, I tell the story. I haven't told the story in a long time. But I started doing checklists on my inspections when I was buying the smaller units. It wasn't as big of a deal, you know. I always had my own personal checklist. Oh, I still had a property inspector go in though on each one, but I would do my own when I was doing the offer, so I knew what to negotiate. And I talk about the single family that I was planning on flipping because so I could get a down payment for another multifamily property. And it was this old, big old farmhouse built in the 1700s. It had this big hearth fireplace, you know, about 6 feet high. You could walk in it. And it had the wide pine plank floors. And this house was so beautiful, you know, rustic New England house. And I just imagined, you know, all the, you know, the big plantation out there. Well, not a plantation, big farm out there. And I imagine the workers, you know, the family members going out there and working all day and then coming back and cooking in that kitchen. And down below in the basement, there was one of those beehive ovens. And I thought, oh, this is where they made the bread, you know. And I was thinking, oh, what, this must be beautiful. And all my imagination was just running, you know, over and over and over. And, you know, what I didn't do is I didn't, because of all of these things going on in my head, I didn't do a really thorough inspection of the property. And this is like 4 or 5 years into my deal doing, and I'd done so many. And what I missed was all of the sills were rotted. They were completely rotted. I had to raise that house, you know, up a few feet so I could take all the sills out and replace them. And that cost me a lot of money. That taught me a lesson to always use checklists and check everything off just in case I get distracted with anything.
Absolutely. So, yeah, no doubt. I think ours might have been a little cheaper than yours.
Yeah, I think it may have been, certainly for the size of the deal. All right. So you went in and you put the property under contract. You did your property inspection. And then the next step is the raise. So you're a lender. So where did you get the funding for this deal? Was it a Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, CMBS?
This was a Freddie Mac loan, a small balance loan, 80% leverage, 3 years of interest only payments, and 30-year AM. It's just a, you know, your standard SBL deal. Rates were a little different at that time. I think we're around 5% on this one. But For the time, it was a good rate.
Yep. Yeah. Even if you think about it, you know, 5% still is a great rate. You know, it's as you can certainly get less now, but imagine, yeah, you know, a couple of years ago thinking, oh, you know, damn, 5%, that rate sucks. You know, you just, all right. So now you had to fund the deal. How'd you go out and get this deal funded through private money? Was it a syndication that you did?
You know, it was interesting. It was initially we went in with the intention of doing a 506B. Or I'm sorry, 506C. And throughout the process of talking to potential investors, my now partner, who's subsequently gone on to buy other deals with me as well, Rob Rozelle, he's a member of the program, been real successful. He actually had some 1031 monies that he was going to use to invest in the property. And so, you know, we had every intention of just doing a standard raise, but we had to kind of change tracks a little bit and structure the tenant in common, structure the TIC to accommodate his 1031. So we ended up syndicating our tenant portion, and then he brought his, and it's worked out quite well. But it really made things easier. It was a little extra work to do the TIC, but you know, for the value was there given his position in the deal. So that worked out real well.
Very interesting that you say that, because there's a lot of times where you're doing a raise for a property and somebody says, I've got some 1031 money. Can you use it? And you know, there's the specific rules with 1031. So the fact that you can hybrid it with a syndication, if you do it properly, is something that everybody really needs to know, that you can actually use that money. What was the purchase price on the deal?
Purchase price was $3,250,000. And so we had about a $950,000 raise.
How much was the, how much did Rob bring in?
$600,000.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was definitely worth it.
Yeah, some 1030 money out there. I remember Rob's been with us for a while. For anybody that doesn't know Rob Rozelle, he wrote a book. Do you know what the name of his book is?
His book is called Addicted to Life.
Oh, Addicted to Life. Yeah, Rob was actually a heroin addict. Heroin addicts, either one of two things happen, unfortunately. Well, one of three. Very few of them actually get clean before they either go to prison or they die. Rob ended up in prison. And then from there, found a new life and created his own life and came out and, you know, is living a really good life now. Owns several multifamily properties, owns 5 different auto repair shops, giving back to his community on a regular basis. It's a great story. So I highly recommend that book, Addicted to Life.
I can tell you, it goes partnering with him and his wife, Claudia, who is a driving force in that relationship as well, has been, I mean, I would have to say it's priceless. There's really no, you can't put a price on that type of relationship and the type of advice and, you know, mentorship and kindness that they've shown me over the years. They're just phenomenal people. So yeah, it's well beyond money.
All right. So let's go to, that's the best, you know, that's what's so great about, you know, networking and meeting people and doing this business is, you know, you get involved with the right people and it works out well. You create some really, really great relationships. So talk about the St. Louis market. I got to ask you, have you been to Clementine's in St. Louis?
I have.
The ice cream store?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's one of the few places in the United States that combines ice cream and alcohol.
Oh, jeez. All right.
It's really, right. Really good. Yeah, I heard about it because I was a member of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Initiative, where they actually came in and they did like a 3-month program so you could grow your business. And one of the people in my cohorts was the girl that actually owns Clementine's and built it up. And she brought us all an ice cream. Oh, my, the ice cream is awesome. I'm not a big alcohol fan. I don't drink a lot of alcohol. I used to when I was in the band days. I don't like mixing alcohol with food. So I wasn't really into the alcohol ice cream. But they got one called Crack. And it is as addicting as crack. And it's so good. All right. So tell me about the St. Louis market. Were you concerned? There's been a lot of, you know, a lot of different things going on in that market.
You know, there are. You're absolutely right. And it can be spotty. You can easily, you know, get into the wrong pocket. This asset is actually east of the Mississippi River. It's kind of interesting because we're still inside the St. Louis MSA. So it allows us to get all the benefits from Freddie Mac because we get 80% leverage, we get the lower rate that, you know, for a standard market like that, but we're sort of outside the fray where we still get a solid cap rate. It's in a town called Granite City, which is just, you know, south of Edwardsville. It's just east of the river. A lot of blue collar work there, and it's a solid renter population. So we ended up benefiting from that, where we were able to get a little bit better yield and still get the nice debt structure.
When you were doing the underwriting in that deal, did anything stand out? Did you have to negotiate? How did the negotiations go? Excuse me, what was on the market for?
If I remember right, it was on the market for probably 3.5 in that range. They would have priced it just under 3.5 if I'm not mistaken. And my partner Addy actually did the initial negotiations. I kind of jumped in a little bit later on. You know, he did a solid job of underwriting. And yeah, we ended up at the 3.25.
So, you know, as the lending broker, you picked up that underwriting after he did it. Was there anything odd in that underwriting?
There wasn't really anything odd. It was kind of cookie cutter. He was an RE Mentor student, so he's cut from the same mold. Definitely running 3 to 3.5% rent bumps, and you know the 2% expense ratio. We pretty much just ran it, and at that time, it was a solid cap rate. You know, we were jumping in just below a 9 cap, which, you know, 3 years ago it wasn't the 4.5 to, you know, 6 cap that everybody's, the mantra was. It was a really solid structure. There was actually, they were putting their CapEx above the line as well. So they had at least $20,000 of CapEx in their NOI. And it was kind of interesting because I called a management company that I knew in the area. And I'm like, hey, I'm not going to do this unless you come in and you know, manage this property. And he's like, you're in luck. I already manage it. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it worked out great. So they already had the asset. I was starting to tell him a little bit about it. He's like, of course I know it, you know? So it turns out that it was a super smooth transition. We didn't have to do, you know, that all the accounts switched easily. All the numbers, you know, just, it was a real smooth transition because we maintained the same management company. And they actually jumped in the deal and took a small piece of the equity. So they have a vested interest in the game there. And I know that can go either way, but it really worked out well in this one.
They were part of the raise?
Yeah.
On the personal side. They liked the deal that much? Well, I mean, that's a good indication that you're probably going into a good deal when the current management company wants a part of the action.
That's it. And it's worked out exceptionally well. I'll tell you, we haven't seen expenses reduced all that much just because of taxes and the, you know, insurance. Since we bought that, you know, insurance as a whole has gone up dramatically, just industry wide. So we haven't seen a whole lot of expense reduction, but we were able to implement the rent increases like we wanted to, and it's been real solid returns.
What happened during COVID?
Knock on wood, we have had minimal COVID impact. It's wow. We're actually 99% occupied right now. Delinquencies are minimal, and you know we're scoping up our next rent bump.
So, anything unusual happened during the takeover?
I will say this. Because of that management staying in place, it was a very smooth transit. It was real smooth for us. It's always a bumpy ride when you're switching management companies, but when it's the same management company, it's so smooth.
All right. So how about lessons learned on this particular deal? If you were going to say, you know, after this deal, you know, I realized that, number one, I'm not going to do my own inspections. That's one lesson learned, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of the
big ones. What other lessons did you learn on this deal?
You know, I also learned about the city inspectors. And, you know, as soon as you take over, they're going to come and give you a nice welcome to the neighborhood letter. And, you know, it's super important to understand who you're working with there. And if there's an existing relationship, that can make your life so much better if you know somebody or whoever you're bringing in has an existing relationship with the local inspector.
Yeah, a good existing relationship.
Yeah. Yes. Well said. It could go either way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Good. Yeah. Sometimes some cities, they have what they call the task force. When they find out that a property has changed hands, they show up in a van and they all jump out with the clipboards. I know the city of Brockton, where I did my initial investing, it was just like that. It was awful. So that was the Georgetown Apartments in Granite City, Illinois. Now, we are going to go to the next round of this interview, which is what I call lightning round. All right? So in lightning round, I'm going to ask you questions, and you're going to say the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay?
All right. You got it.
You ready? What's your favorite day of the week?
Wednesday.
Favorite city in the U.S. besides the one you live in?
Miami.
Nickname your parents used to call you?
Champ.
Champ for what?
I guess things to come.
Okay, go on. That's a good one. Let me see. Last song you downloaded?
Oh, Chris Stapleton. It had to be something Chris Stapleton, but I don't know what.
What's that? Strawberry wine?
Probably Tennessee whiskey. How's that?
Oh, yeah. Tennessee whiskey. Yeah, right. Would you rather be able to speak every language in the world or be able to talk to animals?
Oh, animals.
What's your favorite holiday?
Christmas.
How long does it take you to get ready each day?
30 minutes.
Scale of 1 to 10. How good a driver are you?
10.
Hey, remember, it's me you're talking to. Me who has firsthand experience being your passenger. All right. Fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is?
Great.
At what age do you want to retire?
60.
That's the thing with entrepreneurs, right? It's like retirement. What are you talking about? Retirement? Yeah. I hadn't thought about retirement.
Kind of threw me on that.
You know? Life is all about deal doing. All right. If you had one superpower, what would it be?
Mind reading.
And the last question, is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal crackers?
I think that's individual principle.
Okay. That's Eric Stewart. Hey, Eric, usually I end it right here, but I do want you to have the opportunity to go out your contact information because you are an awesome source for lending. So this is Eric Stewart from Atlantic Capital. Eric, how would somebody get a hold of you if they wanted to?
Oh, thanks, Dave. Yes. My number is 800-916-9005. No formal schedule. Call anytime. Love to talk to you about getting your financing done. And thank you so much for letting me throw the number out there.
Hey, 2006, we've had a great relationship all through the years, man. That's what life's all about, networking. All right, so that's Eric Stewart. This is Georgetown Apartments, and this was Dissecting a Deal Lab. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.